The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Draw me close to you. Never let me go. And lay it all down again. To hear you say that I'm a friend.
Good day. The Almighty Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. If you don't believe there's a Creator, then the Almighty has said regarding you, why would I want someone to spend eternity with me when they do not believe I exist? So if you're just going along in life without belief, thinking something nice is going to happen to you when you die, I've got bad news for you. You're going to end up as an ancestor spirit or demon. Very unpleasant. If you're a believer at some limited level, but you don't have a real relationship with the Almighty, he said concerning you, why would I want someone to be close to me in heaven, which inherently means I will give them great prestige and authority, if they do not have a deep personal relationship with me and have not proven to me that they can be trusted in this life? So again, if you're a nominal believer and you pottering along thinking that you're going to go to heaven and have a nice time when you die, you might be in for a nasty shock. You could end up in the trash heap of heaven, the outer darkness, cold, dark, black, unpleasant. So you might, if you don't believe, you might want to decide to believe tonight. And if you do believe but you've really done nothing about it, you might want to decide to up your game. Tonight's topic is the global flood that changed the world. We're looking at part five, how the geology and topography of our planet were formed. This is based on a set of presentations that were created in 2010, which are available on the internet, on my website, and also in YouTube and SlideShare. Context to this, the Almighty has said, I created human beings, this planet and this universe, for men and women to be my friends, my companions, to explore and learn and develop together. My greatest grief is that almost no person understands this, let alone seeks such a relationship with me. So an overview of tonight's program. This chapter reviews the explanations given earlier with regard to the source of the water and where it went. We will speak about the reality of ice comets and the reality of an ice comet impact crater on Mars. We will note that this crater would have a sizable footprint on Earth and that such a comet would submerge the Earth to a depth of 11.75 kilometers when melted. We will recognize that the entire surface of the Earth indicates massive impact damage. It will be stated that this impact gave rise to fracturing of the crust of the Earth, and it will be postulated that the axis of the Earth swiveled and the orbit of the Earth was deflected, and this led to massive forces acting on the Earth. It is surmised that when this rotation of the Earth occurred, the core lagged behind, resulting in massive dragging forces, which gave rise to shear on the face of the crust. It would be asserted that once the continental plates started to move, massive impacts would result when they struck one another. This would give rise to the mountain ranges all over the Earth. This continental separation is associated with expansion of the crust, leading to rapid high-speed drainage of water off the continents with massive erosion. It would be postulated that the Earth expanded by approximately 25%, and it would be asserted that there is a nuclear fusion reaction taking place in the core of the Earth, heating the core. It would be asserted that this is the best available theory. An explanation will then be given with regard to establishing the date of the flood. By way of introduction, who am I? James Robertson. I have a doctorate in engineering. I was a strategic management consultant in South Africa for 25 years. a business executive. I'm now a business executive in the UK. I have over 26 years' experience of actively seeking to draw close to the Almighty, following a dramatic encounter with him on the 12th of March 1993, when he spoke to me audibly in a locked room. What is End Time Issue Ministries? It's the organizational vehicle that I use for delivering my message through email articles, websites, this radio program, and physical books. What is this program? The Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. It represents the essence of my message. See the website www.endtimeissueministries.org for more information. It's www.endtimeissueministries.org for more information. Questions from last week's program. Question number one by Tasha. Did God use the flood as the lesson? I'm not really sure it was a lesson, it was a judgment. I think there's lessons to be learned from it, but I don't think he did it in order to teach us a lesson. Maybe he did. I think he used it to get rid of a whole lot of people who were really out of line and were an offense to him. And I think that's it. Question number two, John asked, do you think that God uses natural disasters to wake up mankind? He can, but I don't think that most natural disasters are from him. The world is physically mashed up, as we are seeing during this series. And so the natural disasters are just the natural consequence of the instability that we have on Earth today as a consequence of the global tectonic event that we call the flood. Question number three, Lynn asks, can you tell the difference between man-made and God-made? I'm not quite sure what we're referring to here. If we look at creation, if we look at everything in front of us, if you pick up a piece of fruit, if you pick up a flower, if you pick up your pet cat or dog, if you just look around you, you can see any number of things that are created by the Almighty, made by the Almighty. Man-made things are different. Man-made things are clearly man-made. They're not, machines and cakes and buildings and roads and cars and all of that sort of stuff is clearly man-made. So I'm not sure that I'm answering your question, and if you want to give me more details, I'll try and answer it more clearly in the next program. Question four from Mari. When will the next flood happen again? Well, Father promised Noah that there would never be another global flood. Now you can read about that in Genesis. Right, so the global flood that changed the world, a little bit of a recap. This broadcast is the culmination of a number of years of observation and research coupled to formal training in geology, geography, science, mathematics, and most importantly, engineering. The broadcast seeks to make visible key aspects of the topography and geology of our planet that are obvious and in plain sight once one is sensitized to them. These observations evidence that the entire planet was submerged underwater at some time in the past, and that associated with this, the surface of the Earth is radically transformed and subject to massive tectonic, that is, ground movement events. All of this took place around 4,500 years ago. That's that there are very few archaeological finds that are older than this, and the entire surface of the Earth dates back to this event. Theories of much older dates for the formation of the surface of the Earth and older datings of archaeological findings are shown to be flawed and false. So we're moving on to chapter 8, where did the water come from and where did it go? This chapter consolidates what has been said in previous sections regarding the source of the water that flooded the Earth, and also where it went after the flood. Visit the website www.endtimeissueministries.org and visit the flood pages. There's an item on the menu, flood. Just click on that or hover over that and you'll find a number of pages, including pages with videos, etc. I've indicated that the mechanism that I understand to be responsible for the global inundation with water, coupled to massive surface disruption, so this section serves to consolidate what I've said. it's really important to put aside one's preconceived ideas and one's prejudices in what we're talking about. There's so much wrong thinking and wrong teaching around. It rained for 40 days and 40 nights. Well, it may have been unstable for 40 days and 40 nights, but as far as I can establish, Noah and all the people on the ark were actually hibernating or put into a deep sleep by the Spirit of the Almighty. They were all strapped down because the ark was tossed around like a little cork in a massive sea. And so all the animals were strapped down, all the people were strapped down, and everything was put into a state of hibernation, deep sleep by the Spirit of the Almighty. So, and also the ark was completely enclosed, so there were no windows or anything. So I think it's unlikely that anybody knows whether it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. That's just some tradition that's been passed down. I think it rained continuously throughout the entire period until the water had drained off the continent, and even then I think it was probably raining almost continuously because there was just so much water available and so much disruption to get the water up into the atmosphere. Not to mention all the tectonic events, the upwellings of volcanoes and lava flows and granite domes, etc., where intensely hot lava, intensely hot magma was coming to the surface, contacting the water, being cooled very rapidly, but also at the same time evaporating huge volumes of water. We've talked at some length about these points. I'm recapping. We've seen that there are a huge number of chunks of ice in orbit around the Sun in the Kuiper Belt, at the extreme limits of our solar system. We've seen that ice comets are real. Photo of a comet called Lulin from NASA on the website. Chunks of ice travel in space in the form of ice comets. Travel at huge speeds, tails behind them of water being thread off, and dramatic stuff. They really, really do exist, and there's a steady stream of them coming from the Kuiper Belt. We've seen an ice impact crater on Mars, which has geometry that seems to be the result of an ice comet impact. Why do I say that? There's a ridge, a circular ridge, and then there's an indentation, but the indentation is not very deep, and it's the base of it is flat. So if you think of it, if a big chunk of rock had impacted there, the chunk of rock would be embedded in the surface. When a chunk of ice hits, as it makes contact with the surface of the Earth, the intensely high pressure and temperature more or less instantaneously melts that object. And so it doesn't penetrate far into the surface of the Earth or of Mars in this case. So important to look at these things critically, and I haven't investigated this, but I'm fairly sure you'll find that there are other craters on Mars, craters on the Moon, etc., which all have these characteristics. In fact, I think you will find that most of the craters that are on the planets are the result of ice objects striking, probably all pretty much from the Kuiper Belt. In fact, it's probably quite a common thing. The crater we're referring to is called Hellas Planitia, and that crater would have a sizable footprint on Earth. If you're familiar with Africa, it would stretch from Lusaka in Zambia to Cape Town in South Africa. And we've seen that an ice object the size of this crater would have a substantial footprint, such that it would submerge the Earth to a depth of 11.75 kilometers. We've also seen that an ice object this large, striking the Earth and melting, would cover the surface of the Earth to a depth of around 11.75 kilometers. That's more than enough to explain the water-based surface features that have been discussed in previous chapters. In fact, this comet is probably too large. A smaller comet would be more than sufficient to submerge the surface of the Earth. Remember also that the mountains we know today are a consequence of the flood and did not exist before the flood. We therefore have an entirely plausible and practical explanation for where the water came from. I'm hoping that as you think about what I've been talking about in the last few weeks and what I've just been talking about now, you're beginning to see that there's a need to think outside the box. You need to look at a dramatic event, a radically different event, something that our life experience doesn't equip us to really visualize or interpret. Think about it. Look at the mountains. Look at the seas. How on earth did all this happen? It can't have happened slowly over millions or billions of years. It has to have happened very rapidly. And this is the explanation. So we move on to impact damage. We've seen considerable evidence of massive surface disruption. How did that happen? Well, as we've seen before, the impact of an object even smaller than that depicted in the discussion previously, could cause a massive impact when it hit the Earth. It is postulated that this would have knocked the Earth off its vertical axis to an inclination of about 30 degrees. It has subsequently rebounded to the present 23.5 degrees, and that it would also have knocked the Earth out of its circular orbit around the Sun of exactly 360 days, resulting in the current annual cycle of 365.25 days. So things we take for granted, like the tilt of the Earth, not the way it was originally designed, originally vertical, spinning serenely, uniform temperate climate. The little bit of evidence that is found is huge trees, huge mosses, huge ferns, huge animals, huge humans. Benevolent climate, some form of water canopy which filtered the sun's rays, insulated the earth, very comfortable temperature, truly a paradise. And then this event came along and all of that was destroyed. It's postulated that some of the water came from the water canopy, that when that was penetrated by the comet, that disintegrated, and so that may be where the initial rain came from. But as far as I can see, just a comet the size of, smaller than Hannah Panettiere was more than enough to do this. Then get to fracturing of the crust. The impact would also have caused fracturing of the crust of the Earth as the shock waves from the impact traveled around the Earth. So we have an explanation for the formation of the continental plates and the associated tectonic activity in the form of volcanoes, granite domes, lava flows, etc., some of which we've touched on in previous programs. Think about it. The core of the Earth is molten. It's liquid. There's some reason to believe that at the time that this happened 4,500 years ago, the crust was much thinner. And so you smack this huge object, roughly 1,500 kilometers in diameter, into the surface of the Earth. It's going to send shock waves all over the place, start fracturing, and compress the core, all sorts of things that it's very difficult to visualize, but there were 20,000, roughly estimated 20,000 volcanoes active at this time. Lava flows, granite domes upwelling, tsunami waves ripping around the planet, material being eroded and laid down and eroded and laid down, and domes, etc., being thrust in and rapidly cooled, and material being turned into quartzite and other metamorphosed rocks, just an absolute turmoil of instability and tectonic happenings and flood happenings. Flood's probably not the right word, but I don't know what else to call it. It's just such a dramatic hydraulic event. So we see that this hysteresis of the core, which provided the force to separate the continents and get them moving, the forces of rotation would act very differently on the solid crust of the Earth versus the molten and therefore liquid core. The crust directly impacted by the strike would rotate with the rotation of the axis and change in the orbit of the Sun. The liquid core would demonstrate the standard hysteresis effect that is experienced by any volume of liquid subject to a change in direction. It would do its best to keep moving in the direction it was moving before the impact. This would lead to shear on the base of the crust. So shear being relative movement between the core and the crust. And that's between the rough inner surface of the crust and the liquid core. So the liquid core would, bearing in mind this is a highly viscous, it's not a fluid, it's molten rock. So it's really thick and gooey, if I can call it that. And that would drag on the crust, and you've broken the crust up into segments, the things that we call the continent. And drags those things around and then smashes them into each other. If you can imagine what was going on under the water, and this is all happening under the water, by the way. If you can imagine what was going under the water, it's really, really dramatic stuff. And it explains everything that we see around us today. So once the continental plates started moving, they would keep moving until they impacted something to stop them, the other continental plates. This gave rise to the major mountain ranges such as the Alps in Europe, the Himalayas in Asia, the Rocky Mountains in North America, the Andes in South America, and other mountain ranges around the world. The same movement caused tears in the ocean floor, such as the Mariana Trench. So where did the water go to? We're left with another unexplained phenomenon. Where did the water go? The most probable hypothesis is that the Earth expanded. Exactly how it is expanded is the subject of divergent theories, but there's quite a large body of opinion that says that it did expand at some time for diverse reasons. Consider the page on expanding Earth in Wikipedia. The pointer to the Earth expanding is the fact that the continents fit into one another. You can collapse all the continents back towards each other, and you'll see the most noticeable example is the east coast of South America and the west coast of Africa, which if you cut them out of a map, fit together almost perfectly. And so something happened to move the continents apart like that. And as I said, the hysteresis of the core rotating in response to the change in tilt of change in tilt of the axis of the Earth and the change in the orbit around the Sun caused huge, huge stresses. So there is a theory that following the impact of the ice comet, the swiveling of the axis and the change in orbit and resulting disruption of the surface of the Earth, leading to the continental plates being formed and movement commencing, and that this was associated with expansion of the surface of the Earth. One theory says that if the diameter of the Earth is reduced, just conceptually and by calculation, or you know, by cutting up a sphere of the Earth, that the diameter expanded by about 25% to arrive at the present diameter. So if you reduce the diameter of the Earth by whatever that figure is, it's less than the inverse of 25%, the continents all fit together perfectly. I've not found substantive documentation to back this up, but it seems quite possible from a geometric perspective if you look at the continents. So we've asked, you could ask the question how the Earth expands, and we've looked at that. We've talked already about the hysteresis effect, the drag of the core trying to continue rotating in the way it was rotating before the surface, the Earth itself, swiveled on its axis and had its orbit changed. And so that would get the continents moving. And, you know, the fact that the mountains are both on the west coast of North and South America suggests that, you know, that they were moving in the same direction. So, very dramatic stuff. Just to come back to the core, there's a nuclear reaction going on in the core of the Earth. That's how it happens to be molten. If we assume that when the Earth first came into existence, the core was relatively small and relatively cool, and that as time passed, the reactor in the core became more active and the core became hotter, larger and more molten, then the ice comet impact causing the fracturing of the continental plates may have paved the way for the core to expand. It also seems possible that the massive disruption associated with the ice comet impact might have caused increased activity in the core, leading to a substantial increase in temperature and therefore associated expansion. The fact that matter was forced out of the core in the form of volcanoes, granite domes, lava flows, etc., evidences that there was excess pressure in the core from the commencement of the ice comet impact. So again, just massive, massive disruption. It's important to understand that the core of the Earth is radioactive, is nuclear, because we get radioactive traces in the igneous rocks on the surface. And there's a piece in the presentation on the website where there's a video about the isotopes that are found in granite, which point to the granite being almost instantaneously cooled when it came into contact with the freezing water that was circulating around the Earth. And so when you accept that the Earth is in fact at some level radioactive, then anything that works with dating based on radioactive levels is completely spurious. It's just silly, folks. It just doesn't make any sense, actually. So in conclusion, what I've outlined to you today is the best theory that I know of. It fits for me. It's entirely consistent with information reported by NASA in 2009 and 2010. It made sense to me the first time I heard it. I leave it to you to ponder and take a view on whether you have a better theory. It certainly works better for me than to suspend my engineering intellect and training and believe that all the things I've shown you happen gradually over millions or billions of years. Steady-state theories just cannot explain what we've discussed in this presentation. Massive external forces have to have been applied. A massive external source of water is absolutely essential. There are large chunks of ice in space. An astronomical object or ice comet explains the situation perfectly. Is there a better theory? I don't know one. What do you think? I would encourage you to take time after this broadcast to really contemplate what you've heard. I encourage you to go to the website. On the menu, there's an item called Flood that's about 2/3 of the way down the menu. If you hover over that, you'll find a whole lot of child pages. One of the child pages is Flood Video. And you'll find all the videos there, all the slide share. And have a look at that. Watch those videos. And ask yourself if all the other stuff that you've heard, all the other stuff you've been taught, really stands that test. I suggest for your consideration that it doesn't. So moving on, chapter 9, what is the age of all this, really? We've repeatedly been told that the surface of the earth is millions or billions of years old. We read of archaeological finds with ages like this. In the introduction to this series of teachings, I made the point that nearly all things in the physical world follow exponential characteristics, and that extrapolation, even by small amounts, is extremely unwise. So when did this flood really take place? In considering the question of the age of the current topography and geology, one must keep in mind that the surface of the Earth was totally mashed up in the wake of the ice comet impact, and therefore everything on the surface of the Earth today dates back to no earlier than the date of this event. So when was the event? How long ago? Each stage of what has been discussed happened rapidly. We've seen that. It's more likely to be weeks or months per stage rather than millions or billions of years. There are written records that suggest this happened as recently as 2345 BC. Other widely held opinions state that these events took place billions or millions of years ago. Which view is more reliable? The thing to understand here is that if you are coming from a base of either believing that it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, you can't correlate that with what you see on the Earth, so the explanation of millions or billions of years then becomes plausible if you don't actually question it. If you don't understand the laws of mechanics, if you don't understand that the mountains on this Earth could not have been formed without massive forces, you're likely to make the wrong judgment. So we've got to look at how we get to an age of this. So we've already mentioned that the difference between exponential and linear characteristics. So fundamental to understanding the question of aging of this event is to come to terms with the reality that most physical characteristics follow exponential curves and are not linear. This is particularly so with radioactive decay. There are images in the presentation on the website. So we get a situation where if we assume linear trends, extrapolation gives ages in millions of years. But if we assume exponential trends, then extrapolation on the same data gives thousands of years. Interesting. Key to understand this. We are so indoctrinated into millions of years and billions of years, we don't question it. Folks, there is no possible way that it is conceivable that you can extrapolate back millions of years with anything approaching accuracy. And if you use something that relies on levels of radioactivity, and as we've seen, it just doesn't work. It doesn't fly. We're sitting on top of a nuclear reactor. And at a point in time, roughly 4,500 years ago, I suggest, that nuclear reactor was spewing out 20,000 volcanoes, innumerable granite domes, innumerable lava flows. There was radioactivity everywhere. And so when Noah and his animals and people got off the ark, they got into a radioactive environment. Another consideration, what I call the God's word phenomenon. This whole situation is clouded by what might be termed the God's word phenomenon, which relates to people who claim that the Bible is the word of God and without error, and therefore try and ram their beliefs down other people's throats on inaccurate interpretations on the basis of the Bible says. In fact, it turns out that a key aspect of the debate relates to ignorant insistence on the Bible as final authority, with no understanding of physics or any other technical knowledge, versus arguments against believing the Bible that then go off at a tangent and miss the point. The brutal truth is that nowhere in any Bible I've ever read, and I have read many Bibles, Does it say something like, I, the undersigned, being the person who collated all the writings in this book, hereby testify that I was directly and intensely guided by the Almighty Creator, and I therefore testify that this book is the Word of God. Even if there was such a passage, one would need to ask carefully how much reliance one should place on such a declaration by an unknown person. Then, if one were to ask the Almighty his opinion, one would discover that he's not particularly keen on the Bible because of the way people worship it and have relationships with it instead of worshiping him. See the Bible page on the website for more information on this topic. So bottom line, as I see it, is that the Bible is a useful and reasonably authoritative compilation of historical writings by a diversity of human beings who've had a variety of relationships with the Almighty. And that's it. No more. Corollary to that is what one might call the my teacher told me phenomenon, or maybe my professor told me. So we get otherwise rational and sensible people who suspend their intellect on the basis of unwise beliefs about the Bible. Then we get other rational and sensible people who suspend their intellect based on what some educator or other esteemed person told them. The harsh reality, as we have seen so far, is that conventional wisdom regarding this event we like to call the flood, is that there is a lot of wrong thinking on the part of people whose opinions are, for the most part, considered authoritative. As far as I can determine, most of this wrong thinking relates to beliefs that they took on early in their careers from people they esteemed and greatly respected, and therefore never questioned. And to question those people now seems in some way disrespectful. So we find otherwise rational academics making statements about the age of things that simply do not gel. We also have the problem of geologists, historians, and other specialists who lack engineering training and engineering fundamentals, who therefore make assumptions that are simply not valid. And of course we get engineers who have trusted their professor and take on these things and don't question them. Because actually, for the vast majority of things that people do in this world, it doesn't really matter whether this took place 4,000 years ago, or 50,000 years ago, or 500,000 years ago, or 5 million years ago. The fact is that there was a dramatic event. And so people take on board beliefs about the topography of the Earth being formed over millions or billions of years without thinking, and nothing happens to really challenge that. Another point of reference, the problem of clean sharp corners. All over the world we find clean rocks with sharp corners. Over millions or billions of years these corners would be weathered and rounded by thermal stressing and covered with moss and lichen. So millions of years is improbable. Are there other indicators of age? I'm sure you can find them. I want to talk a bit about reductio ad absurdum. We've spoken before of the mathematical and legal principle and technique of reductio ad absurdum, reduced to the absurd. This is a well-established and well-proven deductive technique, and I will use it presently. The term is very well known and well applied. At the time of delivering this broadcast, there were over 680,000 exact matches of the phrase in quotes on Google. Reductio ad absurdum says, assume that a particular theorem or theory is valid, and then argue that with regard to pieces of information that come to you. And basically what it says is, if the theory is valid, you will prove it, and if the theory is invalid, you will eventually get to an absurd deduction. Very few geologists, maybe no geologists really, are schooled in reductio ad absurdum. And it's certainly not applied to what's taught in schools and universities about the history of the Earth, formation of the Earth, and so forth. We'll use it in a minute to discuss some of the things that we're looking at. It's so important that you bring all your knowledge and experience in all disciplines to bear on subjects like this, particularly when it involves the Bible. The Almighty does not expect you to abdicate your intellect in order to believe in Him, in order to have He is the engineer beyond all engineers. He's the scientist beyond all scientists. He's the geologist beyond all geologists. He doesn't need you to abdicate your intellect to believe in Him. Another concept, extrapolation should be avoided. We also previously discussed the engineering and mathematical principle that extrapolation should be avoided. This is so because it is not possible to predict the behavior of materials and other phenomena outside the realms of observed data. Searching for that text in quotes to get an exact match on Google, we find 4,090 exact matches today. This is an important deductive principle, a principle that is totally violated by those who claim that they can age archaeological remains to millions or billions of years, when all they are measuring is noise and data, which is almost certainly exponential, and which is subject to all sorts of contamination over time. As an engineer designing things, you would get into serious trouble if you extrapolated beyond what you could measure. And if you did that a little bit out of extending what you were working with, you would probably get failure. And if you got failure, you would end up in court for negligence. And some expert witness would remind you that extrapolation should be avoided and would inform the court that, and you would end up quite possibly in jail. These are principles that are absolutely fundamental, folks, but they're not applied generally to the subject we're talking about. So that's all for tonight. I just want to digress for a few minutes as I wrap up and ask you, where are you in your relationship with Father Yah, the Almighty Creator of the heavens and earth, who you may know as God or you may know as the Lord? Do you realize that it is possible for you to become the closest person to Father in this age of any human being alive today? I'm guessing that that thought has never occurred to you. It's entirely possible. I've spent 26 years getting close to Father, 26 and a half, I guess. And I'm not nearly as close to Him today as I was a few years ago. And I believe I'm not nearly as close to Him as I could be. I've been through a lot, got beaten up spiritually quite a few times. I'm still having to earn my living. I challenge you, please seriously consider today making a decision to grow closer to your Father in heaven, much closer. If you're an ambitious, results-oriented achiever, why not set out to get closer to Him than I am? Why not get out to be the closest there has ever been to Him in the history of mankind? It's there for you. We'll talk in a minute about some documents that will help you get there. I'm happy to help you get there. Email me and we can talk. It's really a great opportunity. So to review what we've just talked about, we've looked at the explanations given earlier with regard to the source of water and where it went. We spoke about the reality of ice comets and the reality of an ice comet impact crater on Mars. We noted that this crater would have a sizable footprint on Earth and that such a comet would submerge the Earth to a depth of 11.75 kilometers when melted. We recognized that the entire surface of the Earth indicated massive impact damage. It was stated that this impact gave rise to fracturing of the crust of the Earth, and it was postulated that the axis of the Earth swiveled and that the orbit of the Earth was deflected, and this led to massive forces acting on the crust. It was surmised that when this rotation of the Earth occurred, the core lagged behind, resulting in massive dragging forces, which gave rise to shear on the base of the crust. Once the continental plates started to move, it is asserted that massive impacts would result when they struck one another, and that this would give rise to the mountain ranges all over the earth. This continental separation was associated with expansion of the crust, leading to rapid, high-speed drainage of water off the continents with massive erosion. It's postulated that the Earth expanded by 25%. It is asserted that there's a nuclear fusion reaction taking place in the core of the Earth, heating the core. And it is asserted that this is the best available theory that I know. Then went on to have a look at an explanation with regard to establishing the date the flood was initiated. We talked about rocks with sharp corners, evidencing that they were young rocks. We talked about reductio ad absurdum as a deductive principle to be applied. We talked about the principle of not extrapolating. And we talked about other things. To wrap up, five key documents that you might like to look at are all on the main menu of the website. The Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you near the bottom of the menu. Seven components in drawing close to the Creator near the bottom of the menu. Recommended worship near the bottom of the menu. Songs that are strongly recommended. The Creator's name is Yah, the Eternally Self-Existing, at the top of the menu. Where will you spend eternity? What is required in order to qualify to sit on a high throne for eternity? Also near the bottom of the menu. All available at www.endtimeissueministries.org. Transcripts of nearly all teachings in this series are available on the website at the bottom on the radio page. Recordings of nearly all of the teachings broadcast so far are available on the radio page, and they're all available at http://relationshipwithcreatorradio.com. That's relationshipwithcreatorradio.com. Click on the show and then podcasts. Books constituting a compilation of most writings published since 1998 are available near the bottom of the menu at the compilation of most writings page and are physically available. I publish regular email articles. Email james@endtimeissueministries.org to be added to the list or to seek counsel, prayer, or give me feedback. Visit the website and use the Google search, article keyword cloud, table of contents, and article search to locate the information you're looking for. The website is designed to provide you with as much resource as possible to help you in your journey of drawing close to the Almighty. I encourage you to use it. Many of the articles have been written with a significant anointing, significant level of inspiration. In closing, thank you for listening. Please send me your questions on the W4CY webpage. I will answer them next broadcast. Please email me to join the mailing list at james@endtimeissueministries.org. That's james@endtimeissueministries.org. If you decide to draw close to the Almighty, please let me know and we can connect by Skype, Zoom, email, or telephone so that I can help you with your journey. I hope to connect with you again next week when we will continue to explore how to become a friend of the Creator. If I can just make a point here, it doesn't matter how wealthy you are or how poor you are, it doesn't matter how clever you are or not clever you think you are, it doesn't matter your age, it doesn't matter your gender, it doesn't matter your race, it doesn't matter your tribe, it doesn't matter your nation, it doesn't matter the color of your hair or the color of your eyes or the color of your skin. Father, Yah, the Almighty Creator of the heavens and earth, wants to be your friend. It's there for you today to make a decision, read the article on seven components of drawing close, or listen to the recordings of the broadcasts a few months ago off the website. Download them. They're there to download in zip file. And start today to draw close. I really, really encourage you to step out and do that right now. Please call me. Thanks so much. Good night. Good night.